Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure that you knew that my online knee course with Lenny Macrina is on sale for $200 off this week. If you want to learn exactly how to evaluate and treat the knee, you're going to love our comprehensive course where we cover our clinical examination, exercise progressions, and specific information on ACL, meniscus, patellofemoral, articular cartilage, osteoarthritis, and so much more. Plus, you can earn a ton of CEU credit. The course is on sale this week for $200 off. Head to MikeReinold.com/knee for more information and to sign up today.
On this episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show, we talk about infraspinatus atrophy and whether or not we should focus on correcting knee valgus.
The Ask Mike Reinold Show. Helping people feel better, move better, and perform better.
Welcome back, everybody, to the latest episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show. I'm up here with Dave Tilley, jumping around.
Jumping Dave jump Tilley.
I'm pre-shadowing the episode.
We have questions ahead of time.
Lenny Macrina, Mike Scudino, Dan Pope. We are here answering your questions at Champion PT and Performance. Len, do we have some students you want to introduce?
We do.
You're the next contestant on The Price is Right.
Oh, hey. You guys are back there.
We have the Shelly Anderson from Augusta, Georgia. Fun fact about Shelly, she was a level 10 gymnast, level 9 gymnast. In high school and college, can you be a level 9 gymnast in college or a level 10 gymnast?
I cheerleaded.
I thought you were a gymnast.
Till high school.
Okay. She was a level 10 gymnast in high school.
I really guess that.
And then she was a cheerleader in college. Cam McDonald was also a cheerleader in college at University of Rhode Island, where he sought a degree of physical therapy doctorate program.
That was barely uncomfortable.
He's kind of a cheerleader here, too. He's not doing a lot. He's just standing around.
There it is. Oh, it's awkward now.
On that note, Cam, you want to start it off with a nice question?
I would love to. All right, so we have Tom from Latvia. Hi, guys. Wanted to ask about infraspinatus atrophy. What are the common reasons? Is it possible to fix it? And how this problem can influence your performance if you are an overhead athlete?
Whoa. That's a big question. All right. Infraspinatus atrophy. All right. Why can we have infraspinatus atrophy? Who wants to give a reason?
Not training good enough.
I think the first thing you jump to is something neurological, nerve-related issue, a lack of training, or some kind of more local muscle issue.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly have like both sides just seem like, you know, like not hypertrophy, right? Like, so not necessarily atrophy. So what, maybe we'll go forward with this question. I mean, obviously people can be deconditioned, but let's just assume we're looking and there is an obvious gross atrophy, like the muscle's gone. Right, I think that would be it. So Mike said neurological, right? So what nerve would that? Wait, Shelly, what nerve would that be?
The suprascapular.
Nice.
You look at me.
Wow. You knew that though, right, Mike?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding, right? So, all right. So suprascapular nerve, right? Why? You know, I did notice they said overhead athlete, but why would we have a suprascapular nerve injury? That's weird. Why does that happen? Who wants to go?
Surgery.
Okay.
One option. During a surgery, something got nicked.
Okay, yeah. Possible.
I'd say like a cyst, maybe a posterior labral tear resulting in a paralabral cyst,
right,
compressing the suprascapular nerve. That we see that a bunch, unfortunately, and that's usually requires surgery. So if we see it in an overhead athlete, that's why for our baseball players, all shirts off so we can examine. I think that's commonly missed. I've caught a bunch of those where they've been elsewhere and it's just called impingement or whatever, and then you just have them take their shirt off and it's like obvious, like Mike said, like it's just like somebody scooped the muscle out and it's just like, okay, no wonder why you're struggling, you know. And then that's going to be an MRI and that's probably going to be decompression of the paralabral cyst to take some pressure off the nerve that Mike talked about, and hopefully that infraspinatus can come back. It depends on how long it's been going on, you know, if the nerve has been compressed for a while, but they can come back, but it can be a struggle because nerves are silly.
So, I mean, like, if you had a cervical injury or something like that, a cervical type thing, you could certainly have this, but you tend to see a lot more than that. Like, when you just see isolated infraspinatus atrophy, which I think is what you're getting at in this question here, it's almost always from, like, a suprascapular nerve type injury. So maybe something happened to the nerve, maybe there's a cyst, but what tends to happen the majority of the time is when you have a labral tear, right? So if you're looking at your glenoid, you have a labral tear, posterior, superior, just even superior right there, you can have a cyst from that labral tear, right? So you get, like, a little bit of, like, a pooch, like, coming out from that joint that comes out. And if that gets big enough, it can actually impinge on the suprascapular nerve. It can even block where it goes to the suprascapular notch of the scapula. And then what happens is it gets choked right there, and then the infraspinatus underneath starts to atrophy. So that's kind of, like, the number one thing. So if you see something weird, especially asymmetrical atrophy of the infraspinatus, you want to get an MRI and get that checked out to see what's going on. So like Lenny said, if there's a cyst there, sometimes we do nothing, right? Sometimes it kind of like kind of goes up and down a little bit, like waves of the ocean, right? Where the cyst gets a little bigger, a little smaller, a little bigger, a little smaller. Sometimes we have to aspirate it, which isn't that big of a deal. And sometimes they may even have to repair the labrum so that way you don't get a cyst coming in again, right? So it's kind of a big topic. But if you're seeing something like super weird with atrophy, probably want to send them out for a referral to a doc and get an MRI, so that way you're not just like banging your head against the wall trying to get them stronger, but they have a neurological kind of issue, right?
Is there anything you try in the meantime in terms of strengthening?
I feel like you're setting up a question.
Softball! I'm glad you asked. They probably want some guidance.
That's good.
Put them in the meantime, get them stronger.
I like that. So what would you do?
Maybe you could try some like NMES stim on the infraspinatus, try and stimulate locally at the muscle. Try and get a contraction of the muscle and do some strength training. See if you can get it back, and it may affect your prognosis. Like if that's not really working, then they may be better off going down the surgical route or something like that if there is a cyst.
I bet that happens the majority of the time too, is that we actually try to treat it through strengthening. And then we supplement with neuromuscular stim as well. So we do that quite a bit to just try to help. Because oftentimes it's not like 100% like that the nerve is not firing, right? It's a certain percentage that's
just sleepy.
That's you know, that like some of it's working. So we try to maximize that and get them super strong as much as we can, right? If it's an athlete that doesn't even care, I mean, you might get enough Terry's minor strength that they may not even care anymore. They may have enough like function, right? But yeah, absolutely, get it strong. Probably send them out for an MRI. I think that would be, you know, the biggest thing. It's actually not that uncommon, and it's often missed. We see it. We have them take their shirts off, like Len said, and it's obvious, right? And you ask them like, hey, did the last three people even look at this? And they're like, no, nobody noticed that. Yeah. Right? And it's crazy.
I think also I've had people pitch with it and pitch effectively having it. I found it incidentally on somebody who had a UCL tear and needed surgery, and it was a senior and wanted to pitch through it. He pitched through it, no problem, without surgery in his elbow or surgery in his shoulder. So how he would have done long-term, I don't know. Another fun fact, Todd Ellenbecker put a study out. I think it was just at APTA. I don't know if it's been officially published yet, but in pro tennis players, he found, I think it was roughly 60% of pro tennis players had obvious infraspinatus atrophy. So it's almost like an adaptation that happens in a weird kind of way. Or I don't know if they're all developing some kind of cyst or some kind of nerve issue by the traction forces using a tennis racket, but it's higher than you would think, as Mike mentioned, the incidence that are out there, especially in tennis.
Are they asymptomatic?
I'd say asymptomatic in baseball. I'd say, I don't know, maybe like four. I bet you about four guys every time we test through, four guys out of like 12 or so, give or take, like probably have some sort of atrophy that we notate, right? So it's a big difference when you have an obvious nerve thing and there's a hole there, right? Versus somebody can be atrophied because they're weak. And that happens a lot in overhead athletes. So I'd love to see the degree of atrophy in that study. But what do we got, Shelly? We got another one?
We do. Kayla from New Orleans. What are your thoughts on correcting knee valgus in athletes who are in later stages of ACL rehab? I know knee valgus is something therapists usually try to discourage. However, it is a natural motion that is seen in professional elite athletes. Should we still discourage this motion if it naturally occurs in the sport?
I feel like the questions we're getting now are just like, everybody's so confused with the crap they're seeing on Instagram, and then they ask these questions because everybody wants to argue everything on Instagram. So I like this, how this was specific to knee valgus, right? This is a good one. So I don't know. Dan, you want to start maybe with this one? So, all right, you have knee valgus in an athlete. This was someone specifically returning from an injury, right? ACL? All right, so man, I mean, you're making this even easier for us, right? So they're coming back from ACL injury and they have knee valgus when they're doing stuff. Do you correct it?
I would correct it.
Or do you work on it? I don't even know. I wish we could just go correct.
Yeah.
Right? But like, do you work on improving that?
Yeah, I would. I think the statement is like, can we build enough capacity into valgus so that basically you can handle that throughout your sport, and maybe to a degree. But the other part is if you have too much valgus, it kind of overdoes the amount of stress that the MCL can handle, and then all of a sudden you've got a big problem, I guess, on your hands.
Among other things, yeah. MCLs is like, there's way more than that, but yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I do think that it's probably worthwhile to teach someone to land well. I think we have a good amount of research to support that if you land well, you're less likely to have problems in the future. So it does make sense that you want to at least teach someone how to land well and try to shoot for that, you know?
Right, sure.
Maybe if you're doing some exercises into valgus to maybe strengthen that up a little bit, maybe that can help as well. But the primary thing, I think, would be to teach someone to land with the knee kind of lined up with the toe.
Right.
I do think that you're probably going to deal with a variety of different things. So one, you have to make sure there's no mobility limitation. Maybe that's something coming from the ankle. It's leading them to have a little bit more valgus or some toe out. Maybe the tibial rotation is not quite where it needs to be, you know?
Sure.
It could also be that someone just has a habit. A lot of people just have their knees come in when they jump, and then you just correct them, like all of a sudden they're jumping just fine. And keep in mind that that is an easy cue, but the person probably needs a lot of cue and a lot of practice in their own sport environment to make that a long-term change, right?
Right.
And the last thing is it really could be a strength issue. So I think you have to figure out what that person is having problem-wise, right? Do they have enough strength? Do they have enough mobility, right? Are they having a good habit? And then over the course of time, you're just picking the interventions that work on the specific problems that they do have.
Nice.
And they're probably going to need a little bit of everything, you know? Or maybe they don't. Their mobility is fine.
Or you'll find something. I feel like I want to rant on this one, which is good, so I'm going to let you guys go first on this one, because this one's I'm getting annoyed just sitting here. But, like, Mike, what do you do?
I think I see the argument, especially on Instagram, that these elite level, especially Olympic lifters and power lifters, tend to have a lot of knee valgus when they do a squat or a clean or whatever. But that's happening at like near maximal load or maximal load. And in rehab, specifically coming back from an ACL tear, we're not necessarily loading up to near maximal load. So if they're having like a strong knee valgus moment with very light load, that's probably something that we'd want to correct from a biomechanical and stress standpoint. If it's something that in competition you're utilizing as some kind of advantage to get out of the hole of a squat at maximal load, I think that's probably okay. But I think most of those people, most of like Olympic lifting athletes can do like bodyweight squat without a ton of knee valgus. That's just something that happens when the load gets extreme.
Yeah.
One thing I will say is that Olympic weightlifting and field sports are not anywhere near the same. So valgus that you're getting in the bottom of a squat, I don't think it's great, but you're not seeing people tear their ACLs left and right. I've seen a few people catch cleans funky and tear their ACL. So it does happen, but it's not rampant, but it's rampant in soccer, right?
Right.
You know, with female athletes. So I think it's, I don't know, comparing two different sports,
right?
You know, so that gets confusing sometimes.
Right. And we can always find a picture of an athlete playing a sport that goes into valgus for a second and say like, see, look. They go in. He didn't die. His leg didn't blow up, right? But that doesn't mean that's the most advantageous thing for them. But I don't want to spoil my rant.
So. I think my two cents is summarizing already what's been said, but I think that is a very – this happens in the spine with flexion a lot too, right? There's a very big difference between maybe what you should be able to do like at a normal body weight movement. Like you should probably – even if you have back pain, you should be able to flex your spine and touch your toes without pain. Like that's a normal thing to restore. If you have a knee injury long term, it's probably good that you can move your knee in and out of valgus. But what is happening on a body weight movement and what you see, like sometimes people have like really freaky amounts of mobility and they do some crazy things on Instagram, right? Like what that is compared to like what happens when you squat super heavy or when you sprint and cut, and there's like super physiological forces that are multiple times body weight. Like your ACL is not designed to take heavy loading into massive valgus, but in a body weight squat, like should you be able to move around a little bit? Yeah. But it's not even the same discussion of what happens when someone's at like massive loads or high forces at end range. So I think there's a very clear difference of like in the clinic, should you be able to squat and move your knees? Sure. And flex your back. But should you promote that as like, we'll start with like, you know, knee and squats and work our way up to back squatting like that? That's probably not a good long-term strategy.
Right. And if you were to, well, I don't want to spoil the rant.
I think doomsday's coming. I don't think I want to add anything. So I want to get my grant.
Winter's coming.
I think my general point is this, like a lot of people, people just want to get out there on Instagram and get their voice out there and stuff like that. But everybody, people are saying, like you got to build capacity in valgus and stuff like that. So if that's the case, then you should be doing valgus exercises in the gym. You're like, all right, do step downs like this, right? And like, and that's that people are doing that.
They walk around like with completely inverted ankles, saying that they won't ever sprain their ankle. I've seen it.
See, but that,
jumping and landing.
But there's a difference.
Yeah,
right?
I think there's a difference with that.
You sprain your ankle because you catch plantar flexion inversion at rapid high force, and you're not ready for it, so you rip through your ATFL. That is completely different than running around submaximal loading on the outside of your foot.
Look, we have so much research showing that biomechanically, yes, I use that word, biomechanically things change when you work in suboptimal movement patterns, right? Yes, the human body should be able to move in any direction and do whatever you want without exploding. Yes, I completely agree. We're in the same boat. But when you have a deviation away from the most optimal movement for the body, it just changes the stress. It's not good. It's not bad. It's not neutral. It's not negative. It is what it is, right? But it's more stress. And we know when you work in valgus of your knee, using this as an example, it's this dude's example, right? And we know if you're working in valgus of the knee, that does so many things. It changes the ground reaction forces in the knee joint. It changes the compressive forces, the patella. It not only changes how much stress is going through the patella, it changes the location on the patella, and it changes the surface area on the undersurface of the patella of where that's going through. So you have more stress on a smaller surface area of the patella. That's bad, 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 right? So like, again, more stress doesn't mean you're going to die, but if you continue to do that over time, you're just loading suboptimally, right? So yes, I think we should all move. I don't think we should make people fearful of doing all these things, but we also have a responsibility as movement professionals, especially if we're in a sports performance type environment, we have a responsibility to teach people the most optimal mechanics to get the most out of their bodies. And that means the most efficient way to transfer stress and energy through the body to get their ultimate outcome while minimizing the stress on the body, right? And that's why we can't say that, yes, you can be able to do that. Yes, it's okay if your knee goes in the valgus every now and then, but we should not just be satisfied with that. We should be trying to teach them more than that, right? So based on that, anybody, I mean, you want to add anything, Len, off that?
Especially the question was on somebody who has a history of a torn ACL to reconstruction.
It's so short-sighted to ignore that has no relevance, you know, to the person. Like, yes, we need to build that, right? But the argument would be like, you need to develop capacity landing in valgus. That's not going to go well, right? Does anybody think, like, let's do more landing in valgus? Let's do box jumps and landing in valgus so that we can build the capacity
for it. Let's hit our head off brick walls, and that'll allow us to decrease concussion rates because we're getting our heads ready for an impact.
That makes sense.
great end of the episode. That's what I'm talking about right there. So awesome. Great discussion. Good questions. Thank you so much. Yeah, we're ending there. I mean, that was good stuff. But look, the questions have been great, and I'm seeing it. I don't know if you guys are seeing it. People are confused, and people are confused by some of the information that's getting out there. So by all means, look, ask. We have a ton of experience here that, you know, we can try to shed a little bit. Like, there's always some right behind every statement, but there's also some wrong sometimes too, and we just have to put that all together. Nobody knows everything, right? We're going to kind of put that together. So if you have questions, you're confused, ask us. Go to MikeReynolds.com, click on that podcast link, and ask us these questions so we can share with you some of our experience, so we can, you know, combine the research as well as the experience and put it all together. Okay, so thank you so much. We'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, head to MikeReynolds.com/podcast and fill out the form to submit your question. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please share this with your friends to help spread the word. It would really mean so much to us. Please check out all my online courses, articles, newsletter, and more at MikeReynolds.com. There's always a ton of great perks for my newsletter subscribers. And be sure to check for my other podcast, the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast, where I go deep into topics and interview leaders within our field. See you on the next episode.